Hello, everyone. And Barbara, it was very nice listening to you speak. You know, actually, of course, it was just hearing myself speak through Barbara, so that's what I enjoyed very much. You just could have kept right on speaking for the next hour, and I still would have had my teaching time, because it would have been no different. Oh, Jamie's barking. She wants in. Hold on one moment, everyone. Okay, she's not only came in, but she came in very happy and very dirty. So go see Danielle. Get cleaned off a little bit. She may have already dropped everything on the floor. I think she's okay, Danielle. I think it's already fallen on the floor. Come here, sweetie. She's cold and wet. We had a big snowstorm here yesterday. It's funny because it wasn't really that much snow. It was a lot of wind. And what we had was whiteouts, where people couldn't see to drive. And I guess there was also a lot of ice on the road. I didn't go out yesterday. But we had a wedding here yesterday. Some of you may have heard about that. And we spent the morning decorating the house. We decorated the downstairs like the wedding chapel. And we decorated the upstairs like the wedding reception area. And as the guests all arrived, they all had stories. They all had stories about the drive. And I remember thinking, oh, look, the weather gave them something to talk about, because they didn't all know each other, but they immediately had something in common, their drive to the wedding. So they all had something to talk about until the wedding began. So Jamie's wet, because she's been out there rolling in the snow a little bit. Oh, yeah, and I hear Barb saying she agrees. Well, you know, that's one thing about what I call wisdom now, is that when we hear wisdom or when we read wisdom, no matter what source and form it's coming from, it's always the same. And so, you know, we hear ourself or we read ourself. Some of you may be aware of the teachings of Inner Ramana, which came through me. And Inner Ramana talked about three states of mind: the resistor, the doubter, and then the third state of mind is abiding. And Inner Ramana said that the resistor is the most common state in the world today. That's when a person believes they know who they are. They believe they know who they are, what they like, what they don't like, what their history is, what they want for their future. And that's the resistor state of mind, because what you're resisting is your truth. By thinking you know who you are, you resist your truth. The second state of mind is the doubter. And the doubter is actually progressive towards awakening. The doubter is beginning to, in some way, recognize wisdom as truth. Something in the doubter recognizes wisdom as truth. Whether the doubter seems to be reading it from a book like A Course in Miracles or hearing it from a teacher like Adyashanti. But the doubter doesn't perceive the wisdom that it's recognizing as its own. The doubter still perceives itself primarily as the personality and believes it's learning wisdom from a teacher or learning wisdom from a book. In my case, when I went through the doubter phase, I believed I was learning wisdom from an inner voice. But I still felt like the personality, the learner, and I recognized the wisdom, but I felt like I was learning it. The third state of mind is abiding. And abiding is when something has happened, something has shifted, where we no longer identify with the personality. We now recognize that the wisdom is our own, is ours. And it doesn't matter whether that wisdom seems to be coming out of this body's mouth or another body's mouth, or it's in a book. It's all the same wisdom. It's all, you know, for lack of better words, my wisdom or our wisdom or one wisdom. So that's abiding. And in the state of abiding, it doesn't matter which body is speaking. The wisdom is the same, you know, and the wisdom is recognized as the same. It's recognized as I am speaking. So that's the experience I had when I came on and listened to Barb. I heard myself speaking through her, and as I said, I would have been happy just to sit here and let her continue for the hour, and I would have done my teaching without speaking a single word because it was being spoken through her, those same words. So thank you. The other thing that I noticed when I came in the room is that compared to usually on a Sunday evening, there's nobody here. And I began to wonder, am I missing something? Is there something going on somewhere that I should know about? Even on Super Bowl Sunday, we have more people than this in the room. So I'm wondering if there's some big party somewhere that I should be at. I noticed Lynn has just come in the room, Lynn Corona. Hello, Lynn. I think you and I have met a couple of times. I'm just a couple hours south of you. I'm down here in Pueblo, Colorado, and I believe you're up there in the Denver area, if I remember correctly. So it's nice to see you. And yeah, Grace, maybe people are traveling for Easter vacation. Who knows? But I'll tell you what. We're going to look at the seven steps to awakening tonight. We haven't done that in a few weeks because I was in Israel, and then last week I talked about the trip to Israel. But tonight we're going to go back to that. And tonight we're going to begin with quote number 501. So what I am doing is giving everyone in the room a link to my journal entry regarding 501. And hello, Clara. It's nice to see you. I believe this is the first time I've run across you since you've returned from India, although we've chatted a little bit via email. But it's nice to see you. Why don't we just start off with a moment of silence, and then we'll just dive right into the seven steps to awakening. How does that sound? Okay. Amen. All right. So for those of you who are new to the seven steps to awakening, this is something I've been teaching for about a year and a quarter now, I believe. And what I'll be doing is I'll be reading first from a book, which is nothing but a collection of quotes. I'll be reading quote number 501. And then I will read from my journal, which is what I wrote after contemplation of the quote. And we'll just go through the quotes in that way. There are, gosh, over 1,500 quotes. So I'll probably continue to teach from this book for a few years. We usually get through about 6 to 8 quotes a week. All right, so quote 501 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is actually a quote originally from Yoga Vasistha. This illusion of world appearance vanishes when one is awakened and enlightened. Then one realizes that it has never been, it is not, and it will never be. This is kind of interesting because I would say Yoga Vasistha has the same definition of the word awakened that I have or that I use. I've noticed that, you know, of course, the word awaken or the word awakening is just a word. And I've learned, especially on Facebook, that people use this word very, very differently. It definitely doesn't mean the same thing to everyone. In fact, I have heard some people use the word awaken to really point to the point in time where they started the spiritual path. You know, so like if I was to use the word that way, I would say that I awakened when I realized that Peace Pilgrim knew something I didn't know, and I wanted to know what she knew. That was my awakening moment. And in a way, it is kind of an awakening because it's a shift. It's a shift from, you know, the purpose of my life as it was up until that moment to a new purpose. So I can see why people use the word awakening for that. But typically when I use the word awakening, I'm not referring to that type of a shift. I also hear people use the word awaken to describe other types of shifts, you know, very important shifts, even the shift of realizing that you are not the personality. And I'm not just talking about an intellectual learning here. I'm talking about realizing that you are not the personality. Many people will call this awakening. I still do not even call that awakening. I call that a shift. That is it's an incredible shift. Again, it changes everything. Just like the first shift did, but I don't call that awakening. You know, A Course in Miracles talks about true perception, and it also talks about a real world. And really, the real world is just the way one experiences perception or sees the world through true perception, which is through the perception of this shift. Of the shift of realizing I am not the body, I am not the personality. But A Course in Miracles says that even the real world is a dream. And it talks about heaven as, you know, for lack of better words, again, sometimes I don't like words, but I'm sure you all understand. It talks about heaven as still kind of somewhat distinct or somewhat different from the real world, like another step. Heaven is beyond perception. In fact, another word that the Course uses for heaven is knowledge. And it says it's beyond perception entirely. Entirely. This is what I call awakening. To me, awakening is beyond perception entirely. So although while perception appears to last, there are great shifts, which we could call awakenings in themselves. I mean, they take us to a drastically different way of seeing, a drastically different way of being than we were before the shift. I personally do not refer to those shifts as awakening. Awakening would be beyond perception. And so when I read this quote from Yoga Vasistha, I hear the same definition. So listen carefully again to what Yoga Vasistha said. This illusion of world appearance vanishes when one is awakened and enlightened. Then one realizes that it has never been, it is not, and it will never be. You see how that's completely beyond perception. Now, sometimes we make the mistake of thinking that if again, words suck, so here we go with the sucky words. But sometimes we make the mistake of thinking that if one has awakened and one is beyond perception, that I should not see them in a body. That is not necessarily true. This is where we make a mistake. You see, when I am awakened, when I am beyond perception, then I am beyond perception. But if I have not awakened, if I am still within the realm of perception, whether it's misperception or true perception, I still experience bodies. So if I see you in a body or as a body, right, that means that I have not awakened. That is not a statement on your condition. That is not a statement on your seeing. Again, Sri Nisargadatta was teaching this one time to a devotee, and the devotee was having great trouble understanding. And he exclaimed to Srinivasagadatta, "But I see you sitting there smoking a cigarette." And Srinivasagadatta replied, "That is your I am the body belief," right? So as long as we perceive, we perceive. But that doesn't necessarily mean, for example, that if there is an awakened wisdom speaking to us, that awakened wisdom may be beyond perception, and yet we still see it as in a body. So we always have to remember, A Course in Miracles says that my only responsibility, actually it says a miracle worker's only responsibility. I take that personally, so I change that to my only responsibility. But A Course in Miracles says a miracle worker's only responsibility is to accept the atonement for himself. So really, all that I need to know is that if I still perceive, I am not yet awake. I don't need to question anybody else's perception or question anyone else's awakened status. I do need to learn to recognize the difference between wisdom, or what we call Holy Spirit, and ego. And when I hear wisdom, I recognize it as wisdom, regardless of the body it's coming through, regardless of the book that it's coming through, right? And not only that, but as long as as long as my brothers and sisters around me are also not awakened, let's assume that some of them are also not awakened, they have split minds, they may have periods of speaking from wisdom and periods of not speaking from wisdom. And again, I don't want to get into the mistake of judging a body as awake or not awake, a body as right or wrong, because a body is nothing. So if my brother or sister in the moment is speaking wisdom, I recognize wisdom and I accept wisdom as wisdom. If a brother or a sister appears to be speaking from ego, I do the same thing with ego in that body that I do with ego in this body. I just see it as meaningless. Ego is meaningless. It just doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't say a thing about my brother. It doesn't say a thing about me. It just doesn't say a thing. That's what meaningless means. So in perception, as long as perception is still a part of what we experience, the only thing we really need to do is know the difference between wisdom and meaningless, unimportant, right? And just learn not to pay attention to unimportant. It doesn't matter. It's unimportant. When we're awakened, there is no perception. There is no other at all. As Ramana Maharshi would say, there is only the self. So again, Yogavasistha said, "This illusion of world appearance vanishes when one is awakened and enlightened. Then one realizes that it has never been, it is not, and it will never be." All right, so what I'm going to do now is just go to my journal. I had posted the link, but I will post the link again because I see a few people have come into the room. I guess the party that everyone was at has ended because now there's some more people showing up. I was joking that when I came in the room, there was almost no one here, which is unusual for a Sunday evening. All right, so number 501 in my journal. Again, this is what I wrote after contemplating Yogavasistha's words. When one awakens from a dream, and here in my words, I'm talking about the nighttime dream that we all experience, right? Just, we go to bed at night and we fall asleep and we dream. When one awakens from a dream, it is seen that the dream was not real. It did not at any time exist. I was trying to recall a dream. As an example, I know I had a dream a couple of nights ago that I woke up remembering. I don't remember the details of the dream. It is primarily forgotten. I more remember the feeling of the dream. In the dream, I remember. In the dream, I'd gone to India with Danielle and Jasmine. And Danielle and Jasmine took off by themselves somewhere. and you know, running around, and I didn't think anything of it. I thought it was okay that they go off and do something because I felt perfectly safe. But then at some point, way too many hours had passed, and I started to look for them. And when I started to look for them, someone said, "Oh, Danielle's in there." And I went into this room where Danielle was, and Danielle was kind of in a fetal position, and she was very afraid. And I asked her what was wrong, and she couldn't speak well, but she was able to indicate that Jasmine had disappeared. And when I asked her where Jasmine was, she said she didn't know. And the horror of my daughter lost in India came over me, and I woke up from the dream. When I woke up from the dream, the first thing I realized was that I was in my bed, Danielle was downstairs in her bed, and Jasmine was in the other room in her bed. We had not gone to India. No one was lost. Nothing had happened. There was nothing to worry about, right? I mean, it was not true. This is the first thing I realized upon awakening from the dream. And so that's what this is saying. When one awakens from a dream, it is seen that the dream was not real. It did not at any time exist. There was never a moment that we were in India and Jasmine was lost, right? It did not happen. And the truth is, that would be just as true if it had been, you know, what one would call a good dream. Like, you know, I used to live in Okinawa, Japan, and I had some friends there that I loved very, very much. And I left there when I was, 24, 25 years old. And I've never been back. But every now and then in my dreams, I'm there. I'm in Okinawa again. You know, and I see my friends, and it really feels good, even in the dream. It feels so good to see them after so many years. You know, it's just wonderful to see my friends. And then I wake up, and it's not true. I did not go back to Okinawa. I did not see my friends, right? So what we would call good dreams are as unreal as what we would call bad dreams, right? Dreams are dreams. And what they have in common is that they are equally unreal. They never happened. Yet in the dream, the Indian dream, I felt the fear of my daughter lost in India. In the Okinawan dream, I felt the heartwarming gratitude and love and tears of seeing my friends again. I experienced both of those dreams. And they were equally untrue. When one awakens from a dream, it is seen that the dream was not real. It did not, at any time, exist. When one awakens from mind as self, it is seen that house of mind is not real. Now, house of mind here is, for those of you who are new to my journal, is a symbol that is being used as the journal, as everything that occurred after what the Course would call the tiny mad idea. Everything after that is imagination, or the house of dream, or the house of mind, or unreal, right? So when one awakens from mind as self, and you know, mind as self, that, you know, that's another concept that may not be real familiar to Course students, but actually, again, if you look at A Course in Miracles, the Course in Miracles talks about the tiny mad idea. Well, when that tiny mad idea occurred, something identified with that idea as my idea, right? That's when mind as self began, or we could also say that's when ego began. When identification with an idea occurred, there was a my idea and there was a self that had an idea, right? Right off the bat, long before personalities and bodies. When one awakens from mind as self, it is seen that house of mind, everything that followed that, is not real. All of creation, worlds, lifetimes, afterlife, and between life was not real. It did not at any time exist. And again, this is where we sometimes get confused as spiritual students. First of all, we identify with being a spiritual student or with being on a spiritual path. And then because we enjoy that identification and we do not realize that that's just as much ego as any other identification, right? That's an attachment, just like any other attachment. We then also identify with or especially enjoy spiritual ideas. And so when an idea is presented like reincarnation, which may be true in the dream, just like Jasmine was lost in the dream, that was true in the dream, she was lost in the dream. But that didn't make it a truth because she was never lost. Reincarnation is not a truth because it's still within the dream. It still occurs in the house of mind after identification with the tiny mad idea. And so this is where we sometimes get confused as spiritual students, is we identify with spiritual ideas, not realizing that those ideas are also part of the dream. Reincarnation, you know, if I could tell you that in a previous life I had been, you know, quote, pick a personality, that's no more real than my being this personality now, right? So when one awakens, truly awakens from the dream, they're beyond even the idea of reincarnation, right? They're beyond even the idea of an afterlife. Another thing that people get really excited about is when people hear about people who had these near-death experiences. And of course, we only get most excited about the near-death experiences where the story they tell is most like what I want to believe. I don't know if you've noticed that. There are lots of near-death experiences, and they aren't all coming back and telling the same story. But people always get excited about the near-death experience that tells the story that is most like what they want to believe. You know, the near-death experiences that the people in this room get excited about are not the same near-death experiences that my mother, the Southern Baptist, gets excited about. She likes the ones where people went to heaven and they met Jesus and, you know, and the whole Bible story was there, right? I don't know what near-death experiences are, but I do know that near-death experiences are a part of the dream. They're not yet awakening. They are still perception. So this is drawing a very firm line between dream and reality. Even true perception, even lifetimes, even afterlife and between life, all dream. All as illusory as Jasmine being lost in India, and all as illusory as seeing my beloved friends in Okinawa again. Didn't happen. All right? So we're going to move on to 502. So what you can do if you are in the journal with me is you can scroll down, and underneath the comment and reply area, you will click on a 502. That will take you there. For those of you who are not in the journal and would like to be, I'm going to give you another link. And there's a 502 for you. And I'm going to read 502 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. We are still quoting Yoga Vasistha. This time, the quote is, "The unreal does not exist at all at any time." You know, another question that spiritual students sometimes ask is, you know, do you think it's true that the world will disappear? And then, after asking the question, do you think it's true that the world will disappear? Well, then sometimes you can get a debate there. Some will say, well, yes, and they'll point to things, you know, in the course, if it's course students. And some will say no, and they'll point to different things in the course. But what this is saying is the world can't actually disappear because it's not here now. You know, only, you know, does a dream, did my daughter being lost in India and Danielle being in the fetal position in a little room, a little curtained room, did that disappear or did it never actually happen? Which one is true? I mean, you can't disappear unless it happens. It has to be there to disappear. You see, so although I experienced it, and I experienced it completely, I was scared. There was a knot in my belly. You know, and I was even looking at the fear in the dream. I was looking at the fear and at the same time even trying to decide which was wiser, taking time to look at the fear, or getting the hell out there and finding my daughter. You know, I mean, all of this stuff was going on, right? All of this stuff was going on, and it never happened. It never happened. The unreal does not exist at all, at any time. Teddy is quoting the teacher's manual. How can what doesn't exist disappear if it never had an appearance in reality? Right. Let's look at number 502 in my journal. This is a little longer. Number 502 in my journal refers to the primordial idea. The primordial idea would be the same as A Course in Miracles' tiny mad idea. All right? So the primordial idea itself is a dream. Okay? The primordial idea itself is a dream. And, you know, I think the best example that we have in the human experience is the idea of a daydream. You know, what if I said, you know, what if Danielle and I were sitting here and I said, Danielle, what if I win the lottery tonight? What should we do with that money? You know, do you realize that if Danielle and I wanted to, we could actually get in an argument over what to do with that money? We could even get mad at each other if we wanted to. We could go in our separate bedrooms and slam the door and be mad at each other because we disagreed on what to do with that money. But you see, I never won the lottery in the first place. That was a what-if question. What if I won the lottery? And then we got too into the idea to realize it had no reality. And we ended up angry and in separate bedrooms, fighting over money we didn't have. Okay? That's the same thing with the primordial idea. The idea itself is a dream. Just like the idea that I won the lottery is a dream, as far as I know. I haven't actually checked my lottery ticket. I could be a millionaire right now. It's possible. But you know, just like the idea that I won the lottery is a made-up idea, the primordial idea is a made-up idea. Mind. Okay, that, whatever that is, and I don't know how to get specific about this, but whatever that is that kind of came into apparent existence and said, this is my idea, this is worth thinking about, right? That is also a dream. You know, just like Regina identifying with how she wants to spend the money is dream. Danielle identifying with how she wants to spend the money, you know, Danielle suddenly says, you know, well, I have decided that I'm a person who thinks ending cancer is important, and I think we should spend all of our money ending cancer. And I say, well, I'm thinking about it, and I think it's more important to save animals from abuse, and I think we should spend all the money. You know, the whole thing is being made up. That identification, that I am someone who's going to spend this money is not true. I mean, there isn't even any money, right? So whatever this is that identified with, that came up and said, this is my idea. I want to think about this idea more. I want to investigate this idea more, this tiny mad idea more. That is also a dream. That's the dream self. That's the birth of the dream self. And again, identification with that, you know, solidifying that as this is who I am. Still dream, right? So the primordial idea itself is a dream. Mind is a dream. Identification with mind is a dream. Dream does not exist. It has no existence at any time. You know, sometimes people ask that question that can't be answered. You know, how did the separation happen? Well, it can't be answered because it didn't happen. Stories can kind of be created to try and help explain it to the thinking mind, to some point where the thinking mind, you know, decides to let go of the question, to be honest. That's about all that ever happens. But you can't really answer the question with a legitimate answer because the separation never happened, right? The primordial idea does not exist. It's a dream. You know, it didn't happen. Mine does not exist. It's a dream. Identification with mind, or the I thought, does not exist. It is a dream. The dreamer of the dream does not exist. You know, Cheryl Valentine, just in the last year, I hope I can bring back her words exactly because her words are brilliant, but I don't know if I can. We'll see what happens as I speak. But just in the last year, oh, I do have her words. Thank you, Holy Spirit. Just in the last year, she says that, you know, she went from thinking that she was the character on the screen to thinking that she was the projector. And she said now she realizes she's not the projector. She's the screen itself, right? So the dreamer of the dream would be the projector. And those of us who identify with the character, who think we're the characters in the movie, we need to move from that level of identification to the identification of the dreamer of the dream as who we are. That's a step forward in realization of truth. But it's not yet truth about who we are. We're not even the dreamer of the dream. The dreamer of the dream does not exist. It is dreamed. It is a dreamed effect of dreamed identification with dream mind. So at some point, some kind of clarity arises after we've accepted that we're the dreamer of the dream. Some kind of clarity arises that says, not even that. And we begin to see that we are the screen, the unchanged screen that has never changed at all. World does not exist. It is dreamed by dream. Dream character does not exist. It is part of a dream. This does not exist. It is a moment in dream. Anything that changes is dream. Anything that has a beginning and or an end is dream, not real. And again, our job, if we really are spiritual students, our job is to find that which doesn't change. And finding that which doesn't change, even that which is beyond the projector, beyond the dreamer of the dream, that which doesn't change is self. Or as Cheryl Valentine used it in her analogy, it's the screen, the unchanging screen. And the screen is the same whether there's a movie playing on it or whether there's not. And whether it's a, quote, good movie or, quote, bad movie or no movie at all, the screen remains the same. That's reality. Everything else is dream, not real. All right, let's scroll down underneath the comment and reply area and click on number 503. I will also put this link in the room. Or I'll drop the mic depending on what I click on. Here's the quote. Okay, number 503 in the Seven Steps to Awakening, still quoting Yoga Vasistha. When dream is realized as dream, as Maxwell has just written in the room, when dream is realized as dream, the false notion vanishes. Awareness drops its object and rests in the infinite consciousness. Awareness drops its object. So, you know, probably the best analogy I have for this is it's as if I really have my attention on that screen. Now, I no longer think I'm the character. I really no longer think I'm the character, but I think I'm the dreamer of the dream. So somehow I think I'm responsible for what's happening to the character. And so what happens is when the character seems to be in a peaceful space, I'm thinking, okay, I must be watching my mind right because everything's happening peacefully. And then when some drama starts to happen on the screen, I start looking for, oh my God, what did I do? What did I do? I must have done something because things aren't going as good anymore. And there's still some kind of an identification. It's identification at a different level, right? But I feel responsible for what's happening on the screen. When the dream is realized as a dream, truly unreal, the object is dropped completely. If it's completely unreal, there's no concern at all about what I am doing to create that appearance. The object is dropped completely. My focus now is on the changeless self. Since I'm focused on the changeless self, I am no longer focused on the movie and worrying about what I'm doing to make the movie go that way. Do you see the difference? It's kind of interesting because it is true, at least for me, and I know for many people in the room, that in this awakening process, we did need to go from thinking I was the character and I was the victim of everybody else to thinking I was the dreamer of the dream and watching my mind, right? Before this realization began to creep in of what I really am and that nothing ever changes and there's nothing to watch. And I don't have a true answer. I'm going to give you what I call a guess answer, so please take this answer with a grain of salt, if you will. I think that what's happening when we do that is there's a detachment process we're going through. We need to detach back from all of our beliefs. Detach back from all of our involvement. Detach back from our judgments, which real, again are really just beliefs. And when we detach back, by back I mean away from, enough space somehow is created that these truer realizations begin to arise. And if we're fully attached, somehow we're completely blocking the truer realizations. So we go through this awakening process that isn't even real in order to realize reality. And one thing that I think is really important is that if we are at a certain place in this awakening process, which I know several people in this room are because I hear you talking about it, okay? So if we're at a place in this awakening process where we're beginning to realize this changelessness and we're beginning to realize, for example, that nothing is happening, therefore I'm not responsible for anything. We still want to allow those who are in an earlier phase of the awakening process to be where they are. And in fact, I think if you are truly realizing changeless nature as self, you would never try and tell someone else their changeless nature if they need to be watching, really focused on their thinking right now. Because you understand the phases that you went through, right, in awakening. So changeless nature understands the phases of awakening and allows the phases of awakening to mature, just like you would allow the different phases of a tree growing. You would allow the different phases of the tree. You wouldn't try and tell the little twig-like plant that it should be a huge tree with a strong, strong trunk. It has to be a twig-like plant first, right? It grows and it goes through different phases. Somehow, for most of us, the awakening seems to do the same thing, even though that entire awakening is still happening on the screen. The changeless reality is always changeless. Again, when a dream is realized as dream, the false notion vanishes. Awareness drops its object completely. It just drops it and rests in the infinite consciousness, in the changelessness. All right, let's go and look at my journal. Number 503. Awakening, spontaneous seeing that the dream is not real, accomplishes all things. The primordial idea is seen to be a false fancy and nothing more. Mind is realized to be non-existent, so there can no longer be identification with mind. As this is the foundation for all that appeared to come after, the entire appearance disappears and is seen to have never existed. Reality is the only is. So that would be synonymous to just turning off the projector completely. There's nothing anymore except the screen now. Reality is the only is. No more movie to be concerned about, no more movie to be responsible for, no more movie to try and change or make it happen in a certain way. No more movie. You know, when I woke up from my dream in India, I no longer had to decide what was most important, watching my mind or running around looking for my daughter. I didn't have to decide anymore. Because we weren't in India and she wasn't lost. No decision needed to be made. It was over. And in fact, it never even happened. So awakening, the spontaneous, true seeing that the dream is not real, accomplishes all things. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 504. At least I think we're going to click on 504. There we go. I had a little bit of a slow reaction when I clicked, but it finally appeared. 504 Yoga Vasistha says, "This world has arisen like a dream." And so where does a nighttime dream come from? Where does the idea that my daughter is lost in India come from? Well, I could probably give you some ideas. One, I've been to India, and I'm going back to India soon. Lynn says she knows that Jasmine would give those kidnappers a hell of a fight. Actually, that's the first thing I thought of, too, after I woke up and realized it was a dream. I started laughing and thought, boy, I'd feel sorry for anybody trying to kidnap Jasmine. She'd give him a hell of a fight. I had the same thought. But let's go back to where this dream came from, okay? So I've been to India, and I'm soon going back to India. I just recently got back from Israel. I've been to Israel 2 times before, both times Jasmine was with me, and a part of my responsibility was to kind of keep an eye on her. This third time, Jasmine did not go with me to Israel. She wasn't there, so I didn't have to keep an eye on her. But twice in the 2 weeks that we were there, the spontaneous thought came into my mind, oh, I forgot to look for Jasmine. I'd start looking for her, and I'd realize, oh yeah, she's not here. So that idea probably made some kind of an imprint, right? Some kind of an imprint. You know, oh, where is she? Oh yeah, she's not here. She's at home. Also, Jasmine and Danielle are very good friends. And usually when I'm not with Jasmine when we're in Israel, Danielle is. And I'm really trusting Danielle to watch her, right? So that idea was already in there. And then not too long ago, maybe a month and a half ago, I read a story, which some of you may have also read, that did make an imprint because it was a scary story and it made an imprint. I didn't just read it and see it as meaningless. It was a story about a woman in India who was really severely raped. Makes most rapes look nice compared to what she went through. And I read the details of that rape. It showed up on Facebook. So you take all of that stuff together, which is in the mind, imprinted in the mind, an article read, history remembered, recent experience. And then the mind just takes all of those imprints and somehow generates a dream, an unreal dream from imprints. That's what happens. It's as simple as that. So the world has arisen like a dream. That means that the world is again arising from imprints. You could call them ideas that get stuck. They get a little stuck, right? It's something that doesn't just kind of pass by meaningless. It gets somehow stuck in there. And when it becomes stuck, then it becomes fodder for the world. It plays out in the world. And in fact, somebody today on Awakening Together told a real cute story about this. Her name is Pia, I believe, and she's a dog trainer. And she talked about how she had a self-judgment recently of herself that, you know, the fact that she trained dogs, she was an empty shell. And the way she worded that, I don't think she meant it the same way NTI means it. I think she meant empty shell, like I'm nothing. Not the nothing like God nothing, but like the unworthy nothing. Like, other than the fact that I can train dogs, I'm not worth shit, might be another way of wording it. So she kind of had this thought about herself, right? And she didn't immediately let it go. It made like a little imprint. It stuck. And she goes on to tell a story about how, and I'll skip the whole story, but a few weeks later, someone else came up to her and said, you know, something like, other than the fact that you're a dog trainer, you're an empty shell. The exact same words, again, meaning you're nothing. You should stand up for that, right? You should stand up for the fact that you're a dog trainer. But she was telling the story realizing, okay, this is what was great about the story. She realized this idea that she had in her mind made an imprint. It got stuck. And a few weeks later, it manifested. Just like the story of that rape in India got stuck. And a few weeks later, manifested in a nighttime dream. In other words, there's no difference. No difference. And I felt the fear in the nighttime dream. You know, there's no difference. It's things get imprinted in the mind because we don't see them as meaningless. We apply some meaning to them. They get stuck. And then that's what both dreams and our world are made from. It's the exact same mental process. So Yoga Vasistha says, this world has arisen like a dream, and he means exactly like a dream. The same thing is going on here, which is why it's really important that through our willingness we learn to see ideas as meaningless. Because when we give them meaning, they become fodder for both our nighttime dreams and for our daytime world dream, right? So let's look at 504 in my journal. I'm going to take a drink of water first. Thank you, Danielle. I didn't do anything. Well, you thought about it. Okay. Although one may try to explain a dream, determine its source, and utter its meaning, this goal can never fully and effectively be accomplished. That is because the dream came from nothing but dream thought. And it has no meaning but dreamed up meaning. Having no foundation in real thought, it has no roots. Having no roots, there is no real growth. The best way to explain it is as nothing. It came from nothing, it was never existent, and its appearance disappears into nothing without ever reaching a meaningful or important conclusion. In fact, look at my dream, with Jasmine in India. When I woke up from that dream, everything was solved because I was never in India and Jasmine was never lost. Like I said, there was an issue in my dream. You know, the issue seemed to be a spiritual issue in a very important moment. What is most important here? To watch my mind, to let go of my fear, or to go running down the street looking for my daughter? I'm struggling with which way am I going to go here? And when I woke up, I didn't have to go either way. What's the Course say? Something like, I need do nothing? The most important thing that we can do, the way it's worded in the teachings of Inner Ramana, is to lose interest in our thoughts. Or the way it's worded in A Course in Miracles in the workbook is to see our thoughts as meaningless. Because then the imprints don't get made that then manifest in some way as an experience. And whether it seems to be an experience in a nighttime dream where you're scared to death, or whether it seems to be an experience that happens in the world, it's still a manifestation of mental imprints. It's the same. And so the best thing we can do is learn not to believe our mind. And again, even at the level of the dreamer of the dream, where I think I'm responsible and I'm still somehow trying to make the movie happen in what I perceive to be a positive way by thinking right thoughts instead of wrong thoughts, that's still giving meaning. That's still judging. To take all of those thoughts and to lose interest in them. This is what we mean by simply be in the present moment. You can simply be in the present moment, and the present moment takes care of itself, including taking care of your actions and what you say. No thinking ever has to be given meaning. And that's the best thing that we can do as long as we still perceive. It's the only truly useful thing we can do as long as we perceive. And sometimes people ask, well, if I'm not thinking, let's say, Regina, your India dream had been true. Let's say that your daughter was lost in India. How would you not know what to do without thinking? Well, the truth is, thinking is what had me standing there in India saying, what should I do? What should I do? And just feeling afraid, confused, and doing nothing. That was thinking. That had me paralyzed. Without thinking, whatever was to be done would have happened naturally. Thinking is not the answer. Thinking is the obstacle. All right, and I'm done, and Lynn is up, so Pueblo is out, and we'll let first Dove, but then Denver, take it away. Everybody have a good evening.